The Daily Connect Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast then for Monday. It is the 29th of October 2018 and it's Stephen Scott back with you again. Coming up, we are talking about spooky books. Yes, Robert Kirkwood and Chris Wallace joined me in the studio to talk about their selection, and I have to say, quite surprising selection of books that you could enjoy this Halloween, courtesy of RNIB Overdrive. We'll also be meeting an award-winning blogger who tells us all about why she has been nominated for a list of 100 most influential disabled people in the UK for this year. We'll also find out about her blog, Life of a Blind Girl, and lots more coming up here on the podcast. But first, we turn to a condition that a lot of people might not be aware of, and we thought we'd highlight on today's programme. It's called Charles Bonnet Syndrome, and we hear all about it now from B.
My name is B. I'm 82 years old. I have I was diagnosed with glaucoma in 2006. My right eye doesn't see at all, and my left eye sees just a small amount. Well, I first started to experience the Charles Bonnet hallucinations about 2 years after the diagnosis. I was just shopping with a friend on a Saturday morning, and I picked up my trolley, and suddenly all the shells seemed to dissolve a bit, and instead of a proper shelf holding bottles and packets and things, everything, it looked as though it was like mud sliding down the shelves, and in the mud were very pretty lights or reflections or windows. And the extraordinary thing was that when it came down on the shelves, if I was holding something in my hand, I couldn't put it back through this mud, because it seemed so very real that I couldn't, that there was no way I could put it back with the mud there. So that was the first incident, and I just thought I'd had too much black coffee, because black coffee had affected me before. Didn't think much about it. Carried on shopping, it was all right. The following week, I thought, well, I won't have black coffee. I don't think it probably happened the following week, but it happened after that, again, when I was shopping out in the bright lights of the shop and with the shelves, exactly the same sort of thing. Sometimes people have said they thought that it must be imagination, this, that I must have a vivid imagination. And I just want to say that there is no way I could imagine straight away a herd of elephants, change it to a plate of bananas, change it to a child playing in the street. I could see those images straight away. There is no way you have any control of the images of that you experience with Charles Bonnet. They just come when they come, they go when they go. As I've got more blind, then these hallucinations have got more elaborate, if you like. I suppose it's because I've lost that much more sight, so that my mind can't, my brain can't understand what's quite going on and doesn't catch up with itself and identify what it's seeing. I understand that there are people who mistake the symptoms of Charles Bonnet hallucinations with the symptoms of dementia. And if only they could really understand that it is an eye condition, and that very knowledge would be wonderful for people to realise.
For more information on Charles Bonnet syndrome, visit rnib.org.uk/iHealth or call our helpline on 0303 123 9999.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
And you can check out more movies like that on RNIB's YouTube channel. All you've got to do is search for RNIB on YouTube.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This is the Daily Connect, and time now to find out about a blog for blind and partially sighted people, which is run by a blind girl called Holly Chook. And she's had some very interesting news recently about her blog and all the things she's been doing with it. Holly joins me on the line now. Hi, Holly.
Thank you for having me.
It is great to have you here, Holly. I wanted to talk to you because you've been in touch with us, because you've got some news to share.
I have, yeah. I'm a blogger, so I'm a disability and lifestyle blogger, and I've actually been listed as one of the top 100 most influential disabled people in the UK.
That is incredible. How does that feel?
Thank you. It feels quite surreal, to be honest. it's still a big surprise and quite a big shock, really.
So what's the kind of reason for that? I mean, I know you do the blog Life of a Blind Girl, and you write about, you know, essentially that. You know, it's a very honest blog. It talks about reality and life as a blind girl. Is it all of that that kind of makes you seen as influential because you're a voice out there representing blind people?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as you said, I'm 100% honest about my disability, so I try to help others through my writing. I try to tackle the common misconceptions and stigmas surrounding sight loss and, you know, try to educate the wider public on visual impairment and disability, really.
You know, it's often one of those things when you're added to a list like this, you know, if you were added to, I mean, I for example, have always wished to be added to the top 100 sexiest men alive, but I know it'll never happen in a month of Sundays. But, you know, the thing about a list like that is, it's kind of like, yeah, so what, whatever. But this list that you're on, you know, being classed as one of the most influential people, in a way, it makes you more influential, doesn't it? Because it gives you a more of a platform to go and say, hey, look, you know, I'm doing this. I'm telling people about what life is like as a blind person, you know, and that gets you to a new audience, which is great for you and your blog.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I don't see myself as influential at all. I just kind of share my experiences of living with a visual impairment to help others, really.
But, of course, yeah.
You know, it's kind of a strange one because obviously I don't see myself as inspirational or influential, but I guess other people kind of do.
How do you feel about it? Because that's one of those questions, I must say. Personally, I'm not a big fan of the word inspiration. It kind of annoys me a bit from time to time.
Yes.
I hate being labelled as an inspiration. Oh, you're such an inspiration. You made a cup of tea.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yeah, whatever. But, you know, when it comes to this kind of thing, you know, that word inspiration probably has a much more broader meaning. And influential, I would say, is actually a much better way to be described. I'd love to be called influential. That's a really nice term because it what it says is that what you're saying resonates out there with people who, yes, are blind, but also people who aren't blind. And in some ways, that's maybe more important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really important to educate wider society on visual impairment and disability because I guess they learn from us. So if they read blogs or interact with a disabled person, then I guess that's first-hand knowledge and first-hand experience for them to learn.
Being a blogger, I mean, obviously, one of the things you look at a lot, I guess, is the stats on your website. You know, who's looking at what, what's popular, what's not. It gives you a guide on where you should go with your content, I guess.
Yeah, it
does. What has been, to you anyway, the sort of biggest and most responded to and most reacted to thing you've written?
My most popular post is a post called Common Misconceptions on Blindness. So in that post, I basically wrote down and tackled quite a few of the common misconceptions surrounding visual impairment. And that's definitely my most popular post. I was really honest in that. And my most popular posts are the ones that are definitely the most honest and real. But also some of the other popular posts are the ones where I share tips and tricks, kind of like life hacks. Doing various things, so things like blogging or maybe doing your makeup or something like that people can learn from.
So there are two audiences you speak to. You talk to blind people, of course, and I guess when you're writing blogs, and I suppose it's hard to put anyone in a box in this way, but you know, if you are writing a blog about being a blind girl doing makeup, then that's going to appeal to people who are blind who want to do makeup, isn't it? I mean, that makes sense. Whereas if you write something about common misconceptions, then you're opening that up to a whole wide range of people. You know, people who don't know much about blindness but are curious, want to know,
yeah.
Terrified to ask. I mean, that's the big problem. No one wants to ask the question, but the fact you're writing it means they can go and read it in private and get their questions answered.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting, actually, because some of the comments I've had or some of the tweets and messages is people saying, I didn't know about blindness before reading your blogs or before doing some research, but now I know, so I know how to interact or help a blind person in the best possible way.
How, if you don't mind me asking, Holly, how old are you?
I'm 22.
Okay, so 22. Are you surprised that in 2018 you're still having to explain what it's like to be blind?
Yes and no. I think there's a lot of stereotypes surrounding blindness that are obviously wrong and outdated that obviously we need to kind of depict and, you know, tell the truth on. So, yeah, I don't think that helps in that sense. But at the same time, no, because many people haven't come across a blind person before. They don't know how to interact with a blind person. So I guess everyone's got to learn. So it's a bit of a mixture, really.
I mean, some of the most common misconceptions are incredible, you know, and we were actually talking about this just today in the office. We were discussing this, one of them being that people who are sighted often don't like saying things like, see you later, or did you watch Coronation Street last night? Because they think, oh, can't say that because, you know, you didn't watch it, you listened to it, and I won't see you later, I'll hear you tomorrow. No, that doesn't sound right. So people are very worried to say certain things. And that's a problem. But then, of course, there's the other side of the scale, which is that our capability is always in question, isn't it? You know, when it comes to employment, you know, there are a lot of people who don't think blind people can hold down a job. Or if it is a job, it's probably something very basic and simple. I guess you want to push past all of that nonsense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I graduated university last year and managed to get a job, which I absolutely love. But I guess, obviously, that goes against some of the stigmas that sighted people think about blind people. People often say, oh, how did you get the job? And I'm kind of like, well, I got it in the same way as everyone else, really.
Yeah. And that's it. People just can't put two and two together on that one, which I still don't really understand. My biggest thing is that I don't understand how people can think that the dog that I don't have a guide dog yet. I am on the list. But, you know, when I have my guide dog, you know, people will think that dog is smarter than me. And that may be true to some degree, but the fact that they will think that the dog is super, super dog and I am simple human. And I just think that's just bizarre. But, you know, you're fighting for this. You know, the fact you've been on this list now, this is good news. It gets your blog out there. For those listening who maybe haven't read your blog yet, and if they haven't, then shame on you. where can people find it?
They can find it at lifeofablindgirl.com. You can just find it there, and you can find all my posts on everything to do with sight loss and disability, and you can find out a bit more about me. So if you just head over to lifeofablindgirl.com, you can find it there.
Are you on social media? Are you on YouTube? You're on those things as well?
Yep, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and YouTube, just as Life of a Blind Girl. And at the top of my blog, all my social media links and YouTube channel is there, so you can find them easily and they're fully accessible.
Fantastic. Well, listen, I wish you all the best in the future, Holly. I want you to come back on, though, and do some more with us because you've got a lot to say, clearly, and, you know, we should be hearing your voice here. So thank you so much for coming on, and I'll do what sighted people don't like doing and say, see you later.
Thank you. See you later.
Bye for that.
Bye.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, you might remember on the programme last week, we talked about the Just Ask, Don't Grab campaign. This is a campaign that was set up by a visually impaired person called Amy Kavanagh. She decided to set up the campaign because she wanted to let people know that it wasn't okay to just walk up to a blind person and grab them by the arm, even if it is well-meaning. Instead, just ask. Well, the question is this a big problem for a lot of blind people out there? And what do they feel about being grabbed or being given assistance in this way? Well, Simon Pauly spoke to Paul Quigley, a regular contributor to the Afternoon Edition, about his experiences.
People do come up and they offer their assistance where it's not actually wanted or not needed. But of course, you have to bear in mind that they do mean well. They don't intend to be invasive, invading your personal body space, which, as most people know, you know, it's about 3 feet, 2 feet around your body. That's your personal space. And when you have a white cane, it's almost people seem to think that they can come straight into your space to help, you know. And of course, if you can't see them coming, it can be an incredible surprise to suddenly have someone grab your arm, usually it's normally your elbow down, which is okay. That's an area, that's like a safe space, isn't it, on the human body, from your elbow to your wrist area. That's okay. I think this campaign is a good idea because it basically it'll promote the sense that people have certain ways and they can't assume that there is the stereotypical blind and partially sighted person that is almost an object rather than a human being, that there is a human being inside that physical body with the sensory limitation. And when they approach you, I think, yes, this is going to help certainly in a way where they can kind of almost introduce themselves rather than just making assumption. And of course, it's all to do with time, is that see, people normally tend to grab hold of you when you're on a crossing, a road crossing or somewhere where they perceive that there's a danger to you and they're trying to be helpful. But of course, as white cane warriors and dog handlers, we do know how to navigate roads and crossings, etc. That's part of the training, isn't it? But they don't know that. You see, members of the public who want to help, they're not aware of this training that we've all had to go through before we're let loose on the streets. And they make an assumption that we're literally completely blind and helpless, which isn't the case at all. There are times, having said that, when it can be incredibly helpful for people to pitch in and say, can I help you? And quite honestly, 95% of the time I go out, there isn't a time that goes by when I don't appreciate that. And sometimes people just come out of thin air, literally, what they do, because if you don't see them coming, they feel like they come out of thin air. And I'm always incredibly grateful, even if I know that they don't realize that that person, that blind person, as in myself, doesn't need the help on that occasion. But you can't brush them off because they mean well. They always mean well. And I would rather someone came up to me and approached me and grabbed my arm, quite honestly, than just stood by, you know, 6 feet away, looking at me thinking, oh, there's a visually impaired person there who's having trouble crossing that road and whatever. I'd rather they jump in and just say, can I help you? Even if they did grab my arm. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, this one, isn't it? You don't want people to think, oh, you know, I better not help them because I don't want to upset them or anything like that. I don't want to win. But at the same time, you want them to sort of think that they are part of the community and, you know, this equality and diversity thing that we're all, you know, part of this wonderful thing now, that they can do that without fear of being snapped at, that we say, we don't need help, because always we do. We like being helped. I love being helped. And I think it's always an opportunity, of course, to communicate with people. It's a bridge building thing. But I mean, in the campaign in itself, there are people who have had trouble with that. Personally, I tend to deal with it in a very sort of gentle way, no matter how well. I'm 6 foot tall and I'm big, so I don't tend to have any problems when it comes to people bumping into me. They tend to bounce off. So I don't know. It's different. Maybe for a little old lady, different. You'd have to ask her that. But personally, I don't have an issue with it. Obviously, it's all about protocol, isn't it?
Well, that's part of a longer conversation that you can listen to on the podcast here, but be interested in your thoughts on this. Is it okay to just grab someone by the arm? Is it something you welcome? Is it something you want or not? Tell us what you think. You can get in touch by emailing radio@rnib.org.uk.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, it's nearly Halloween, so we thought we'd get some spooky books out for you and find out what you've been reading. And we got Chris Wallace, the producer of Daily Connect, and Robert Kirkwood into the studio to find out what they are reading this Halloween. We'll start with Robert. What's your choice?
Yes, well, my choices bounce off Chris's choices. So I think go to Chris for one, then me for another.
Oh, right. Okay, so you've planned this, right? I'm not used to that in this
program. See, it's more that I planned it and Robert thought, oh, that seems like a good idea. I'll jump in on that. What I've selected, Stephen, is...
there's no I in team. Right.
I've selected a classic horror. I've selected my favourite horror book, right, and I've selected what I think is potentially the best audiobook, which is coincidentally a horror book out there. So I'm going to go through those. I'm going to start with the classic, though. And my favourite all-time horror classic book is actually Frankenstein. But since we're playing that at the moment on Talking Books, I thought I'd go for my second favourite, which is Dracula, of course, by Bram Stoker. Yeah. Now, everyone thinks that they've read Dracula, but most people probably haven't. Everyone forgets that Dracula is actually built up not as a narrative tale, but as a series of diary extracts and letters. And the structure of Bram Stoker's Dracula is brilliant. So if you have the chance to listen to an audiobook, and the version that's in the RNIB library is read by a male narrator and a female narrator, so that you get the differentiation of the voices, the diary extracts, the clippings and things. So it's Greg Wise and Saskia Reeves who narrate Dracula in the RNIB Talking Book Library.
And is that when was that done?
That's a new recording.
Is it right?
Yeah, if you go onto Overdrive, which has various versions of the book, you'll find a dramatised version. Mm-hmm. You will find a very old recording of Dracula, the ones that I'm allowed to play because they're out of copyright.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll find that new one with the two narrators. Now, bouncing off that one, I've actually gone for Dracula the Undead. This was a novel from 2009, and it's the official sequel to Bram Stoker's classic novel, Dracula, written by his direct descendant, and it was endorsed by the Stoker family. It's set 25 years after the event in the original novel, and Dr. Jack Seward, who's addicted to morphine at the time, is now travelling around Europe fighting vampires.
Ah. See, I must admit, I've never read the book Dracula. I guess in my head, I've always imagined what it would be. So, and that's the thing with a lot of books, isn't it? You get an idea in your head because it's such an obvious story in some ways. You think, oh, well, I know what Dracula's about. Of course I do. I've seen movies and all the rest. But you're right, the book is probably very different in that respect.
I would argue it's the same for Frankenstein as well, because yeah. The one we're playing and talking books at the moment is told in the voice of the monster, Adam.
Mm.
And it's a very, very different book to what has been filmed in the past.
Also with Frankenstein, if you're not currently listening to it on the station, for a first-time writer, Mary Shelley is fantastic. The book holds up immensely. It could have been written today.
Which, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, there you go, that's her first book. And you wouldn't think that.
No.
You know, because it's so iconic. Uh-huh. Everybody knows it and it's talked about. So, you know, I mean, I have to say, nothing will ever beat the movie Young Frankenstein for me. That's my movie.
It's my favourite Frankenstein movie as well.
I love that movie.
Can I just jump in with another book suggestion as yeah. we're talking about movies? It's called The Lord of Misrule, the autobiography of Christopher Lee. Now, from Bond Barry Scaramanga in The Man with the Golden Gun to Count Dracula and The Wizard Saruman in Lord of the Rings, Christopher Lee's remarkable career has delighted and terrified fans young and old alike. But his life has proved just as strange as his films, as this book from 2003 will attest.
Interesting.
There you go.
That's another one for that. These are good books, guys. I like this. Because actually, you know, I kind of thought you'd say Dracula and I thought you'd maybe say Frankenstein. But I'm learning a bit about the books, which makes me more interested to read them. Okay.
We're not just here for the good looks, Stephen.
No, I know that. Right.
I am.
Well, you won't find any in here. Right. What?
Well, my favourite horror book of all time, and I know it's been done 100 times before, but it's It by Stephen King.
Oh, yeah.
The version that's in the RNIB Talking Books Library is read by Hayward Morse at a whacking 51 hours, 51 minutes.
See, this is often why I don't read books, because I don't have 51 hours to do anything in my life.
But it's an incredible read. I mean, if you watched the TV series back in the 90s with Tim Curry, it gave you a flavour of the book. If you recently saw the movie that came out, it barely gave you half of the book, and all the stuff it missed out. Fair enough, it's maybe not the cherries on top of what the book was, because it's all about the kids in the new movie.
Yeah.
The book is really from the point of view of the adults who are being drawn back to the worst point of their lives where they had to fight this incredible monster, and they've all forgot about it. So it's how their memories come back to them. So the structure of the book is brilliant, and that's completely lost in the film and TV series. If you have 51 hours, 51 minutes to spare, I say read it. Read it, literally.
Read it,
it's
yeah.
a fantastic book and genuinely scary. But what holds up about the book, what you take with you when you leave, is Stephen King writes friendships very, very well, and this book is just full of that. It's about a group of kids who get together as youngsters and learn to fight a monster, and then how they then interact with each other as adults. It's brilliant.
Mm.
My book beats that.
Oh, well, of course it does.
It's at 54 minutes and 10 seconds.
54 hours.
54 hours, sorry, and 10 minutes. Yeah,
you could read a 54-minute book.
How do you do that one? Yeah, I'll take that book on.
It is The Stand by Stephen King.
Right, I don't know this one.
The Stand is basically a virus which gets different names throughout the book, but I think they call it Captain Trips.
Yes,
mainly a virus wipes out most of humanity until there are two groups left, the good group and the bad group. The bad group go to Las Vegas, the good group go to Boulder, Colorado. And it is about, as Chris was saying, about relationships and family and friendships. The build-up to this book is incredible. I think the same with it. I don't think Stephen King can write endings very well.
Okay, I agree with that. The end is always the most disappointing part.
The Kennedy assassination book, 1116...
Robert Kirkwood, 1122-63.
Yeah, it was a great book. The ending, I think, was the best part of that book, but it was over in two pages. But I don't think Stephen King can write an ending. So The Stand is brilliant for 95% of the book, and then it kind of falls apart a wee bit.
Jump in for the relationships, but, you know, be prepared for a bad monster cliche at the end. That's
so all I'm going to say is I'm not hanging around for 51 hours and 51
for a bad
minutes
ending.
For a bad
it's
ending.
Destination isn't important. It's a brilliant journey to get there.
Mm.
It is fantastic. You will think about these characters long after you've put the book away and remember and try and forget what happens to them in the end. But you will think about the characters.
Mm. Stephen King's calling right now and say, hey!
Yeah.
There was a Stand miniseries a few years back, but apparently the company that's got Star Trek at the moment, CBS All Access, they're working on a Stand program for so hopefully it'll come at Netflix.
Well, there's a lot of Stephen King coming out on Netflix at the moment.
Yes.
I've seen a few.
Can I just read an email very quickly from Lauren in Scarborough, who has obviously heard this, and she's talking about some of the books. She loves this time of year. There are so many things that make it special, from food to traditions. There are definitely some books that I read that make it all the more atmospheric. Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, and The Murder on the Orient Express by Agatha Christie are some of my favourites. I love the horror genre, and I find it especially good when listening to dramatised versions of the books.
Yeah, I must say, I think the dramatised version for me always works best, primarily because it's shorter. I just cannot get into these long books. I always fall away. I don't know why. Mm. I just can't seem to get through them. But, you know, maybe this is another way in. But I will certainly, I'm not going to say I'm going to try it, but The Stand does seem rather interesting. That sounds like a kind of cup of tea.
Very, very good, yeah.
Well, listen, thank you for that, guys.
You're very welcome.
Actually very, very interesting stuff. I wasn't expecting that from you. I didn't expect much, but there you go. Right,
thank
you
very much.
And that was our chat with Robert and Chris. And if you've got a spooky book that you'd like to tell us about, or your experiences of getting audiobooks, or any book, in fact, in the format that you want, then do tell us about it. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email radio@rnib.org.uk anytime. You can also find me on social media at RNIB Radio, or, of course, on Facebook. We're back tomorrow for another Daily Connect. Join us live from 10 a.m. or right here on the podcast just after 5. See you tomorrow. The Daily Connect Podcast.